record. There we go. Okay, so we are in Parshas Beshalach. This is the story, of course, of the conclusion of the Exodus of Egypt. And it's the conclusion because the Egyptians were still involved. As the Jews left, the Pharaoh either changed his mind or realized that the Jews are not coming back, which for some reason he thought they would be. And so he chases them. We get caught between the Egyptians and the Yamsuf. God splits the sea. We cross through. The Jews sang a song, which takes up a big portion of this week's Torah portion. We then make it to the desert. We're constantly complaining. We're thirsty. We're hungry. God miraculously provides us with water and then with food, manna from heaven. There's a story of the quails. So we went through all our needs, if you will, in the desert, and God took care of us. We are given specific instructions, which we learn from those instructions regarding the manna, regarding the laws of Shabbos. So, for example, we have to prepare the two loaves of bread that we have Friday night and Shabbos day comes from the story of the manna. And then finally, the Torah portion concludes that when we reached a place called Rephidim, which is either the name of a place or referring to the fact that the Jews' faith in God was weakened at that point, the Amalekites attacked us and were defeated by Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua. The famous story that Moshe sends out Yehoshua with a group of people. Moshe stands on the top of the mountain, holds his hands up. His hands got heavy, and Aaron, his brother, and Hur, his nephew, help him hold his hands up. Okay, so that's actually the focus of our class today, is this last event, the event of the Amalekite War, and specifically the whole idea with Moshe with his hands and holding up his hands and etc. So you don't have the handout, so it's fine, those here. The question for discussion, whatever. I'm not, it's like a, the question is, have you ever stepped up to the plate, or can you give an example? The question, our discussion today is a question of leadership and owning responsibilities. That's really the topic of our conversation today. So we will get to that, and that's the discussion we have today and from this week's Parsha. But what does leadership mean? Today, it's very common in the motivational world, the world of motivation, where there's, you know, people are selling ideas and plans and processes and techniques of how to become an effective and successful leader. So let's see what Torah has to say about it, and what does it mean to be a leader? Howard, they don't have, unfortunately, access to the printout, so we're going to. I'm not going to do a lot of reading with the group. That way we just keep it fair. All right. So again, to just repeat the war. So the story goes, Amalek came and attacked the Jewish people in Rephidim. Moses says to Yehoshua, choose men for us and go fight Amalek. Tomorrow I'll be standing on top of the hill and the staff of Hashem will be in my hand, the staff that the Jews knew. Moshe used it to affect the plagues and then to split the sea. And Yehoshua does as Moses says and fights with Amalek. Moshe and Aaron and Hur ascend to the top of the mountain or top of the hill. And Moshe raised his hands. And when he raised his hands, the Jews prevailed. And when he lowered his hands, Amalek was having a win. And his hands grew heavy. And so he sat down on a rock. Moshe was very tall. We won't get to it now, but according to some, based on calculations, he was somewhere in the vicinity of 7.5 to 10 feet, 15 to 20 feet tall. It says he was 10 amos tall. An amma is anywhere between 18 and 24 inches. If Moshe was 10 amos tall, that would put him at 15 to 20 feet. It is what it is. But he was sitting on the rock. He held his hands up. So Aaron and Hur stood beside him and were able to hold his hands up. And then ultimately, Yehoshua defeats Amalek. with the sword. So the first question that we should ask ourselves right away is, why didn't Moshe lead the Jewish people? As we'll see, and we'll discuss this a little later as well, but possibly, Moshe was a commander when necessary. As we know, at the end of the story of the desert, after the 40 years, the Jews had a battle with Sichon and with Oig, the two kings that were the guards at the entrance to Israel or the eastern border of Israel. And Moshe led the Jewish people in war. He went out in front of, so Moshe was capable of leading an army. Why here did he choose not to lead the army? So what was Moshe doing? So the Mishnah tells us about this story that when Moshe raised his hands, Israel prevailed. What does that mean? And of course, the Mishnah questions it. Was the Moshe's hands the cause of winning of the war or the lack thereof? And the Mishnah says, no, it's rather what actually was is when Moshe raised his hands, the Jewish people were reminded to pray to Hashem and ask for his help. And when he lowered his hands, they sort of forgot that. And so Moshe had to keep his hands up. This is a similar, by the way, if we know the story of the copper snake, where the Jewish people were affected by a plague, and God instructs Moshe to put a snake on a staff, and the Jews looked at it and they got healed. And of course, the Mishnah says that this is idol worshiping. And so the idea was that when the Jews saw the snake, they reminded themselves that there's a God in heaven and they should listen to him. So we see this later happening as well. But that was the Mishnah explains to us that that's what was going on here. So Moshe, again, all he does is sort of encourage the people from a spiritual perspective. He's sitting on the top of the mountain and he's encouraging them to believe in Hashem and to be connected to Hashem. Now, we now find that Moshe actually did something wrong. And as Rashi points out, that when it says in the Torah portion that Moshe's hands became heavy, Rashi explains it to mean because he shirked the mitzvah and appointed another to take his role, his hands became heavy. So we see here that it was considered to be a negative thing that Moshe did not participate in the war, and he was punished for it by his hands becoming heavy. And we see this in more detail in the Mechilta, which is one of the Medrash. And he says, they say as follows regarding that Moshe's hands grew heavy. We learn that one should never defer a mitzvah. For had Moshe not told Yeshua to choose men for us, and rather he would have taken the lead, then he would have not have incurred the suffering. And it says that Moshe's hands were as heavy as two jugs of water hung from them. I don't know why that's relevant, but that's what the Mechilta writes. So obviously, Moshe did something wrong here, or seemingly did something wrong. He was punished for it. So why did Moshe not choose to lead the Jewish people? Why did he send Yeshua to be his commander and not do it himself? And to say Moshe was afraid doesn't make sense, because as we know, he was not afraid of battle, as we see later in the Torah. And Moshe himself considers the role of the leader to be the one who goes out in war. And as we see this at the end of Moshe's life, Moshe makes a request of God to appoint a leader for the Jewish people. As it says in the verse, and Moshe spoke to God saying, may God of the spirit of all flesh appoint a man over the congregation. And specifically, what is the job of that leader? Moshe says, who will go out before them, and who will come before them, and who will take them out and bring them in so that the congregation of God will not be like a flock that has no shepherd. Seemingly going out before them is referring to battle. And as Rashi says on that verse, and he says, not like the kings of other nations who sit in their palaces and send their armies out to fight for them. I'm sorry? But rather, Moshe says, like I went out to fight for the Jewish people against Sichon and Oig, so too the leader of the Jewish people should be the one that leads them in battle. So seemingly Moshe is going against his own ideas here of what the role of a leader is. So we have to understand, what was Moshe thinking and why was it a mistake? Right? And actually, Moshe was not only the leader of the battle, but in other cases, he was the actual warrior. He beat Og single-handedly, right? The story is, but that's how we know how tall Moshe was, because it says that Og's ankle was 30 amos off the ground. He was a giant, so he was between 45 and 60 feet was his ankle from the ground. And it says Moshe was 10 amos tall. He held a staff that was 10 amos long, and he jumped in the air 10 amos, and he hit Og in the ankle and knocked him over. That's the Medrash. Again, we're not. That's not our topic of a conversation today. But we see that Moshe is actually a accomplished warrior. So what's going on here? So to summarize, Amalek attacks the Jewish people. Moshe appoints Yeshua, and Moshe's busy with raising his hands and inspiring the Jewish people rather than actually going to war. So we have to backtrack a second and understand the environment that the Jewish people were in and how they ended up with this war. So the Jews, from the Rosh Hashanah of the year they left Egypt, which is 2448 since creation, right? That's the year they exited Egypt. The Rosh Hashanah from there, they started experiencing the miracles of the plagues, seeing God's hand in Egypt, then the exodus of Egypt, which in itself was a major miracle, the splitting of the sea. At this point in the story, they've been given water out of a rock in the desert. They had bitter water that was became sweet by throwing in a piece of lye. They had bread falling from heaven. They had quail arriving out of nowhere. I mean, they experienced some wild miracles. So miracles in general are a state of anti-nature, or at least nature is the continuous miracles of God. And a real miracle, the miracle that we recognize, is when there's a deviation of nature. So nature is, if you will, the systems that God set in place that are recurring. And so they seem normal to us. In general, as Jews, we're required to behave according to nature. You know, God says, God doesn't like making miracles outside of nature, if not absolutely necessary. It's like the famous story, the guy was, there was a warning of a flood coming to the town, and an evacuation notice was given. And one man said, I trust in God, and I will not leave. God will save me. And so the water started rising, and he goes into his house and goes to the second floor. And, you know, they send in these big trucks with big wheels that can drive in the water. And they say, come, we're here to take you out. And he says, no, God will save me. And then they come up to the water is rising up, and he goes up to the roof of the house. And they're sending helicopters, God will save me. Ships, God will save me. And of course, he drowns. And so when he gets to heaven, he challenges God. He said, God, I was relying on you. So God said, I sent you an evacuation notice. I sent you a truck. I sent you a helicopter. I sent you ships. You didn't take anything. The idea that we're not supposed to rely on miracles is a very, very fundamental concept in Judaism. We don't rely on miracles. We're supposed to work within the world of that God created and nature that God created. So again, but going back to our events that we're holding in the history of the Jews were living through a time of miracles, open miracles. And so things did not go according to regular nature. And Moshe, in general, was also sort of behaving beyond nature. He's already experienced going to Pharaoh and going through all these things. Now, Moshe, let's point out, Moshe, we talked about this before, it was 80 years old at the time of the Exodus of Egypt. He was an old man. According to Jewish law, the age of a soldier is between 20 and 60. Max age is 60. So Moshe is 20 years older than the accepted age for a soldier. And as we see, this, the idea that Moshe was, it says it in the verse, that Moshe was 80 years old. So again, every army has a cutoff age, right? In America, I believe the age is 39 to enlist, but that's not even for active. I don't think you can be active soldier in the sense of going to battle at age 40. I think you have to be much younger than that. But still, up until 40, they'll still accept you in the army. Past that, it's just not worth it. You're too old. So 80 is definitely beyond that. So although Moshe was much older, in a time of miracles, that shouldn't be a question. It shouldn't be an issue. We're not dealing with natural occurrences. We're not dealing with a regular behavior. So this shouldn't be a factor. However, here comes the question. The Jewish people were in a state of challenging God constantly after the... as soon as they left Egypt, really, they were complaining. Right? As they were leaving Egypt, the Egyptians were chasing them. They screamed to Moses, why did you take him out of Egypt to die here? Were there not enough graves in Egypt? Then they go through the sea. And then as soon as they come out, they come to the water that's bitter. And they scream. And they don't, you have this all the time. You can ask a question and you can ask a question. Right? Tone makes a lot of difference. I have a client that always starts off an email or a text message in a very a challenging tone. Why is this not being handled? Rather than there's a situation, can you handle it? It's the same question, right? But the Jewish people, when they left Egypt and the subsequent complaints that they had, were very challenging to God. You know, why did you take us out of here to die in thirst? They didn't say, hey, we're thirsty. Can you, you know, speak to the big man or big boss and arrange for some water? It was more, why'd you take us out of here and want to make us to die here in the desert? Right? As the verse says specifically, it says that the nation there, the people thirsted for water, and the people complained against Moses, and this is what they said, as the Pasuk says, why did you bring us out from Egypt to kill me and my children and my livestock with thirst? Like Moshe was purposely trying, like, that's what was going on here. So again, of course, God took care of the Jews and gave them the water and gave them the money, even though they complained. But Moshe Rabbeinu was noticing that the Jewish people were sort of falling out of favor. As we said, when Moshe left, when they left the place of the water, it says that Moshe called the place Massa and Meriva. Massa means trial and Meriva means quarrel. Due to the fact that the Jewish people were sort of fighting with God about the water situation. So we see here the Jewish people are starting to fall out of favor. And then we have a very interesting medrash that I will read to you now, which sort of gives us, again, more of a picture of what's going on with the Jewish people in these subsequent events of the Exodus of Egypt. So Rabbi Levi says, and I'm at text number 9 if you want to follow along. Yeah. Rabbi Levi said, what is this like, referring to the Jewish people complaining in the desert? A son riding on his father's shoulders. And he sees something he desired and said, get it for me. And his father got it for him. This happened once, twice, and the third time. Then the son saw a man and said to the man, have you seen my father? And the father said, you ride on my shoulders. I give you everything you ask for. And you say, have you seen my father? The father let his son down and a dog came and bit him. So too it was with Israel when they left Egypt. The clouds of glory surrounded them. They asked for bread and got brought down manna from heaven for them. And as it says, that they asked for meat and he gave them quail. And so it was, they said that he brought them their desire. He provided them all their needs. And they said, is God among us? Meaning, you know, are we going to die here? So God said to them, if this is what you think of me, the dog may bite you. And therefore Amalek came and attacked the Jewish people. So the Jewish people had gotten to a point where they had fallen out of favor. So Moshe made an analysis, and Moshe said, it seems like miracles are stopping. That now that the Jewish people are falling out of favor, the miracle period is ending. And so we need to start thinking more naturally and pragmatically. And so Moshe concluded, if we're now fighting a war naturally, I am not an appropriate leader. And rather, he appointed Yeshua, which according to different opinions we have from the Medrash, it says the Yeshua in the time of the war of Amalek was 57 years old. So according to Jewish law, just below the threshold of retirement of 60 years old. Some say that Yeshua was 42, And the Evan Ezra writes that he was 56. Regardless, according to all opinions, Yehoshua was less than 60 years old. So again, Moshe, I'm sorry?
I have a question.
Sure.
Didn't God tell Moses, you hold up the rod and Joshua, I mean,
no.
God decide who's going to be the leader?
No. So the story goes, and I'll go back to the first text, and I'll read it. I'll read the way the Torah describes the story, okay? This is verse 8 in chapter 17 of Shmos, if you have a Chumash. Amalek came and made war with Israel and Rephidim. Moshe said to Yeshua, choose men for us and go out and fight Amalek. Tomorrow I will be standing on the top of the hill and the staff of God will be in my hand. So that no point does God instruct Moshe to do anything. This is Moshe making decisions and doing an analysis and deciding that this is a natural war we're about to fight. And if we're fighting a natural war, by the way, we find this also, for example, the famous story of the spies that Moshe sent to inspect Israel. It says that God told Moshe, you can choose to send the spies if you'd like. And Moshe said as follows, we're going to fight a war to conquer the land of Israel. It's supposed to be a natural war, and therefore we have to do the natural thing, which is before you attack a place, you scout it out. You send spies and you check out the defenses and the numbers of the army. So again, acting in a very natural way. And so Moshe seems to do the same thing here. He concludes that the Jewish people need to fight this war in a natural state. And of course, Moshe recognized that we need help from God. And that's why he went up to the hill. Because he said, in a war where there are people that cannot fight, they have to help in other ways. So either they provide food, or in the case of the Jewish people, we have people that pray. We want people to daven for us. And so Moshe Rabbeinu took the job that was appropriate for him as an 80-year-old man to daven. So that's what he did. So Moshe, now we understand why he chose not to lead the Jewish people, because he felt that the laws of nature were kicking back in. Because again, Amalek attacking the Jewish people was going back to sort of regular day-to-day anti-Semitism, right? It says about Amalek, by the way, that the Jewish people were leaving Israel, were leaving Egypt, and they were the whole world was quaking before them. It says that the nations in Canaan were destroying their homes and leaving because they said there's no way we can manage to fight against the Jews. And Amalek attacked. And so the Medrash gives an example that Amalek is like the city fool, that when you have a boiling bath, everybody's afraid to jump in. It's too hot. And then comes one fool and jumps in. But once he jumps in, he balances out the temperature slightly and it becomes more available for others to enter. And so Amalek was the fool that attacked the Jewish people, even though they seemed to be, you know, unbeatable at this point. But again, in the natural state of things, Amalek is attacking the Jewish people. Moshe sees the Jewish people being falling out of favor in God because they were, I didn't mention this before. The word Rephidim, where the story occurs, some say it means, Rashi points this out, Rephidim comes from the word Rafu, which means they weakened. It was called Rephidim, not because it was the name of the place, but because their faith in God was weakened and their relationship with God and the miracles that God was performing for them was also weakened. So, after all this, Moshe Rabbeinu made a simple analysis. If we're going to fight this war naturally, then we have to do it right and appoint a proper general and a warrior to handle the situation. So then we're left with a question. What was wrong with that then? Wasn't that a correct analysis? Wasn't that the proper thing to do? Moshe's, it's a real situation. We're supposed to deal with this practically and naturally, so he did the natural thing, which is to appoint the proper warrior. So why was that considered to be a negative thing, and why was he punished? So the general point here, and the short answer is, Moshe put too much thought into it. He had good reasoning, and he was justified, but there says in the Gemara, it says that a fool asks the rabbi in a life or death situation, is it okay for me to desecrate the Shabbos in order to save this person's life? Right? Now is not the time to make questions. Act now and ask later. Right? Better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. Right? But seriously, the Torah looks at it as when you see a situation before you that requires immediate attention, there is no time to discuss, is this the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? Somebody's dying, help them. And so Moshe, in this case, when the Jews were being attacked, he should not have wasted time making analyses of nature versus miracles, but rather taken action immediately. And as the Rebbe writes, God, however, countered this as some sort of shirking the mitzvah, as we mentioned earlier from Rashi. We're in text 12 for those who are following along in the handout. When foreign nations attack the Jewish people, and this was true even prior to the giving of the Torah, there is a mitzvah, and it's considered a great mitzvah, to go out to battle and protect the Jewish people. This must be done without overthinking or great calculation, even in a scenario such as this, where there was no explicit command from God, as we mentioned earlier, to do so. The Jewish people are in danger. You have to take action. You cannot take the time to analyze, is this the right thing or the wrong thing to do? So again, Moshe wasn't wrong, but he fell short. He was justified, but he didn't do what he was supposed to do, what was expected of him as the Jewish leader. So this is, in essence, what happened here. So Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake of thinking that it's now a time to consider things in a natural and logical way. And he should have continued on this path of non-questioning. But as a side note, it's a similar idea in the beginning of this week's Torah portion. And I won't go through all the details because it's very long. Not complex, just it'll take a long time. But the Jewish people, when they came to the banks of the sea, it says there were four different camps of Jews with different opinions what they should do. They should go back to Egypt, or they should jump into the sea and die, fight back, pray to God. And God denied all these ideas and said, tell the Jewish people to march forward, right? Meaning the Jewish people were told by God, you're leaving Egypt and you're following the cloud of glory that's leading the way, and it's taking you to the sea. Keep walking. There's no time and reason for discussion right now. Now's the time for action. And as we know, Nachshon, the famous story, Nachshon ben Aminadav, the brother-in-law of Aaron, Moses' brother, so in the family, he was the first one to march into the sea, and the sea split. So, but what's the Torah teaching us in this lesson from Moshe Rabbeinu? What are we to learn from this, practically speaking? Right? Because we can make this challenge again, which is, we're not leaders. So it's like the couple that was asked, what's your secret for your amazing marriage? So the husband says, it's very simple. He says, me and my wife made a decision a long time ago that I'm going to be responsible for all the big decisions, and she'll be responsible for all the little decisions. He says, what do you mean? He says, well, all the little decisions, that where we're going to live, what food we eat in the house, where the kids are going to go to school, that's my wife's decision. But should we invade Iraq? Or who should be president? That's my decision. So, right? The big decisions. We many times assume that we're not the ones that should be dealing with this situation. This is not, this is yet, this something needs to be done, but it's not for me to do. I mean, there are people. We are the people in charge, right? Who's in charge here, right? That's a question. No, people don't take matters in their own hands. They say, who's in charge? There has to be someone in charge. The Torah is teaching us an important lesson. The lesson is that when there's something to be done, there's no time for questioning. And as the previous Rebbe writes, regarding Amalek, and Amalek is representative of this story. Amalek's numerical value, the gematria, is equal to the word suffik, doubt, which in turn is equal to the word mar, which also means bitter. The meaning here is that Amalek instigates doubts concerning belief in God and the sanctity of the Torah. As we see in the, there's another verse in the end of the Torah, when the Torah repeats the command of wiping out Amalek, it describes Amalek's sin. What was his sin? And says as follows, I'll read the verses. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way upon your exodus from Egypt. What did he do? He encountered you on the way. I don't like the way they translate it in English. The words in Hebrew are korcha baderech. Korcha can mean came upon, like in the word mikre, which means an event. But korcha also means made you cold. Made you cold, meaning he dampened your passion. The Jewish people were in a frenzy of leaving Egypt and embracing this Torah, and they knew that they were about to get the Torah. And Amalek came and just cooled them off. And it's like there was a prank once. There was a rabbi was giving a lecture, and he quoted a page in the Talmud, and somebody in the crowd corrected him that he got the wrong page. They didn't have time to look it up at the moment, but the rabbi finished his lecture, but of course without the same muster he had when he started. And at the end of the lecture, he ran and found the tractate, and finds this guy and says, "Hey, I was right." So the guy said, "I'm sorry, I made a mistake." But he killed the speech. He dampened it. He didn't really do anything. He was wrong. Amalek didn't accomplish anything with this war, but they cooled things down. Right? That's Amalek. Amalek is doubt. And in a way, this is what sort of happens to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu asked a question. And so too we all the time ask questions. When something happens, right, and there's an event that requires attention, our first reaction usually is that I'm not qualified for this. This is not my job. And we see today all the time, especially with all these occurrences that happen in public, where you have people taking videos. What are you taking a video? There's a situation here. Contribute. Help. Stop the negative situation. No, but people just take videos because I don't want to get involved. It's not my responsibility. I'm not a police officer. I'm not a fireman. I'm not in charge. I'm not the mayor. But in Judaism, we have to remember this. There's no thing as jobs for the rabbis, right? For example, we see today that we have a moral deficiency in the world. People are descending into debauchery. And our usual reaction is, these people are crazy, I'm not involved. But our job, especially to other Jews, but also to the world at large, is to set a light, right? Our job is to be a light onto the nations. And it's not the job of rabbis or spiritual leaders, it's the job of every single Jew. So the idea, this thought that Moshe Rabbeinu did an analysis and said, this is inappropriate for me because I'm an 80-year-old man, is the same thing we do. I'm not a rabbi. I'm not a learned enough person to be able to spread Judaism to others. I'm not able to affect change. And so we shirk our responsibilities and say, this is not my job. What Moshe Rabbeinu, we learned from Moshe Rabbeinu is there was a situation that needed handling, and Moshe should have taken action. And so should we. And in general, we also have to remember that we have, if anybody who is here for Shabbos, we have everything we need. We're given everything we need. We're given all the power and the capabilities to affect change. It takes one person to say the right thing and to do the right thing to cause a shift. And we should not avoid that. There's another objection that one can have. Says, I'm above this. It's not appropriate for me to participate. I see a Jew that's not participating in any activities in the synagogue. They don't ever come. They don't want to be involved. They're not for me. I don't want to busy myself with them. They're too far gone. And why should I invest time in helping somebody connected to Judaism? They're not interested. Leave me alone. And this is what Amalek is. Amalek is, that's the what we call the klipa, the negative trait of Amalek is that idea of putting doubt in our own minds of should we or should we not do something. We have to remember what Amalek did. Amalek came and tried, and as it says in the Pasuk also, that he came after the people that were falling behind. And it says in the Midrash, what does that mean, the people that were falling behind? Those lacking strength due to their sins, for the protective cloud left them. It says that there were certain people that got kicked out of the cloud. And those are the people that Amalek attacked. And, you know, of course, the Jews went to save them. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, maybe it's not for me. Right? They were not in personal danger. They were not, you know, it's like, it's not my problem. It's not my problem. It's their problem. No, it's all our problems. We all have to be involved in this. And even Moshe Rabbeinu made the mistake of not participating in the actions that needed to be taken to deal with this issue. Now, there's another challenge, right? So the one challenge is I can't do it. Another challenge is I'm above it. It's not for me. Another challenge to doing things can come in the form of I'm scared. I'm going to be affected, right? If I see two people fighting and I get involved to try to separate them, I may get hurt. And so I should avoid the situation. Same thing, somebody can ask, you know, especially somebody, you know, this is an argument against Chabad, at least it used to be, in the religious world. The religious world was very upset that Chabad was sending people to places where there was no Judaism. How can you do that? Because if they go there, they're going to assimilate. They're going to fall apart. They're going to be drawn in to the society around them. And a person can say the same thing. If I'm excited about Judaism and I start interacting with people that are not interested, it will have a negative effect on me. And so just as when we see a person that's in danger, the correct response is to even endanger ourselves to attempt to save them, so too when it comes to spiritual things. Meaning, just as if you see a child drowning in the pool, you're not going to hesitate to jump into the pool and try to pull them out because maybe I'm going to drown. Rather, you're going to jump in and try to save both of you. The same thing when you see a Jew that's drowning in their Judaism, meaning they're so disconnected, they're not interested, and there shouldn't be a question or concern, should I go and try helping them, maybe I will be affected in a negative way. And the Torah actually tells us a very interesting halacha. This is halacha brought down in Shulchan Aruch by one of the commentaries that says that when there's a situation where there's a requirement to desecrate, for example, the Shabbos in order to save a person's life. According to Jewish law, if there's somebody who's in danger on Shabbos, you can desecrate the Shabbos to save them. And it says specifically that the mitzvah should be done by the leaders of the Jewish people. Meaning, the rabbis should go and openly desecrate the Shabbos to save the person's life. Why? To show how important it is. How much, and to make sure there's no questions here. When there's a situation that needs to be resolved, it needs to be resolved, and even the rabbi can do what he needs to do. There's another law, for example, in Judaism, that in general, if there's a situation that's going to be handled by others, then you shouldn't stop what you're doing. Right? So, for example, if you're studying Torah and there's somebody needs to be helped and you see they're being helped, you don't have to stop what you're learning. But if there's nobody around, you got to take care of the situation. There is this idea that you know, you shouldn't always get involved if it's not necessary. But if you see the situation necessary, even if you're doing the most lofty things, even, for example, a Kohen who's prohibited from becoming impure from a dead body, if he sees a body laying on the ground, unburied, he has an obligation to become impure and bury the dead. Because this is a situation that needs to be addressed and there's nobody else around. You do it even though it goes against another command that you have. So again, it's very important that as Jews, we recognize and never give ourselves the excuse that this is not for me, it's beneath me, it's above me, it's dangerous for me. No, there's a situation that needs to be dealt with, you need to deal with. And you need to help a person. And the Rebbe says it in these following words: it is not enough to participate spiritually in every generation's war against Amalek. We cannot satisfy ourselves by reciting a chapter of Psalms as a prayer that others come closer to Judaism, even though this is necessary and important. It is important to pray. Somebody needs to go up on the hill to pray to Hashem. It is also insufficient to send messengers to reach our fellow Jews. Instead, we must personally go out and do whatever is necessary to protect our fellow Jews. If there's something that we can do, we need to do it. We should never shirk responsibility. And this is the question: do ordinary Jews have a leadership role? This is Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Olav HaShalom, said this. If you guys don't know, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks was on a tour in America before he started going to work. He was planning to, I think, become either an accountant or some other profession in England. And he met the Rebbe. And the Rebbe told him to be a rabbi. And he didn't want to be a rabbi. And the Rebbe convinced him to be a rabbi. And he became the chief rabbi of England. And he was a very successful rabbi and very well-loved and known rabbi. But he said this about the Rebbe. He said the quality of the Rebbe to him was not that the Rebbe had followers, devout followers. He said the Rebbe created leaders. What does a leader do? A leader takes responsibility. A leader takes action. That's the job of a leader. And in this sense, every Jew is a leader. The Rebbe used to say this many times. If you know Aleph, you should teach Aleph. If you know Aleph Beis, you should teach Aleph Beis. And so on and so forth. Meaning, if you have something, then you can give that over to somebody else. If you have the recognition, the frame of mind to recognize a situation that needs to be addressed, you should take action and deal with the situation, not, you know, push other people to do it. And that's why the Torah tells us the story of Moshe and points out that Moshe made a mistake. Moshe made a mistake by analyzing the situation rather than taking action that was necessary. And we all have reasons why we feel that we shouldn't do what we're supposed to do. We have this. We're, as I heard somebody said, that people think and ask themselves, why am I so lazy? Why can't I be more consistent and more productive and do more things? And he says, you have it all wrong. Your natural state is to be lazy and to sit around and do nothing. The fact that you do something is the miracle. We have to recognize that our tendency is always going to be to try to find reasons why we don't need to do the work, right? Why do today what you can push off to tomorrow, as the common saying goes. That's our job. Our job is to recognize that we're leaders and that there's a situation that needs to be addressed. We need to address it. And so the takeaway points of this story that we had here of what exactly happened. Moshe didn't personally lead the battle against Amalek, and he was punished for this decision. Even though God respects the laws of nature, the Jewish people in the desert did not operate on that level, and Moshe should have realized that even though the Jewish people were seemingly having a falling out with God, this does not change the fact that they were living in a miraculous state and that they should have behaved in a miraculous state. The Jewish people... the Jewish people did, you know, succumb to nature and were, as opposed to saying, you know, God will provide, they kept questioning and challenging. But Moshe assumed to sort of continue with their process and go according to nature, and that was his mistake. And our message for us is very clear. Don't sit around and say others will deal with the situation that needs to be dealt with. If there's something you can do, now it doesn't mean you have to go do things that are not something you're capable of doing, right? Nobody should, there were some people that were, you know, going to Israel and getting guns and going into Gaza to fight the war. You know, there's sometimes that's not appropriate. If there's an action that you can do, that you see a situation that you can address, then there should never be a question, well, this is somebody else's responsibility. Or maybe I'm not up to this. No, that should never be the analysis. The analysis should always be, I need to do this. I need to deal with this. I need to take action. And never question the abilities that you have, because you have all the abilities you want and all the abilities you need to address the situation. God provides everything, and as we said over Shabbos, that we're living in a time where we're at the end of times, the end of the Golos and the beginning of Mashiach, and we're in the last throes of battle. And the King, God, in this case, opens all the treasures and gives all the things that we need, whether it's the technologies that we have, whether it's the monies that we have, whether it's the understanding that we have everything we need to accomplish the goals that we see need to be addressed. And if we saw it and sees that something needs to be done, then it's most probably something that we should do, and we should not shirk our responsibilities. Yishar koyach, everybody. We're a little bit early today, but it was a simple idea. Any questions, comments, thoughts?
Sure, a comment.
Yes.
So a leader leads by example. Basically, that's the message.
A
boss says, go do that. But a leader says, follow me. Do what I do.
That is true, but the main focus here is not that the leader has to lead by example, but that every single person is a leader. And when there's a situation that needs to be addressed, he or she are capable of doing it and being that leader. So yes, there is that concept that a leader, and we mentioned that the Jewish leaders are the ones who are required to take the first actions to make sure that people realize that this is something that needs to be done. But the more relevant message to us personally is that we are leaders and we're capable of accomplishing whatever we need to accomplish. All right? All right, well, thank you, everybody, for coming.
How did Moses get punished? What was...
That his hands became heavy.
That was it?
That was the extent of his punishment. Okay. But the fact that Moshe was not capable of doing something he thought he was able to do in a way was showing Moshe being lacking something. And so it's not so much of a punishment, like, you know, that... But it's considered a negative mark on Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Yes. Yeah, but he wasn't...
I don't know about that.
I'm sorry?
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, guys. Thank you all. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Now, hopefully next week we'll have the papers in a proper way. Sorry.
Good.
I think, what did they do? Send out a PDF? I never did this remotely. Didn't he send out a PDF or something?
Yeah, there was an email at the beginning, and then it had a PDF attached so that you can
follow.
You're saying in the original...
The way it's been done.
The way it's been done.